The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are set to face off tonight in their first head-to-head debate of the presidential campaign. We're going to be speaking to Terry Sheridan, managing editor of WSHU Public Radio, in about what we can expect. But before that, News Talk's political correspondent Sean Defoe has been taking a look at the history of US presidential debates and the big moments that have decided who holds the Oval Office.
Make Mr. Sure. President, can you let him finish, sir?
No, he doesn't know how to do that. He has,
You'd be surprised.
The wrong guy, the wrong night at the wrong time.
Listen, did you use the word smart? You graduated either the lowest or almost the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me.
For better or for worse, the head-to-head debate has become a key part of US presidential elections. It's widely thought the first televised debate was between John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon. But 4 years before that, Democratic candidate Adlai Stevenson challenged incumbent Republican President Dwight Eisenhower to a TV debate. Only neither of them showed up, sending proxies in their place.
Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt and Senator Margaret Chase Smith face the nation.
And so the first presidential TV debate was between two women.
Face the nation with questions from veteran correspondents representing the nation's press. And now the moderator of Face the Nation from CBS News and Public Affairs, Griffin Bancroft.
This is a big day for Face the Nation. Not only is it our second anniversary, and not only is it the first time that we've had a woman as a guest, today we have two charming ladies, both top campaigners for their parties in the closing days of this campaign.
But the debate which launched TV as a serious vote-winning platform was in 1960 when Nixon and Kennedy showed up and squared off.
I think Mr. Nixon is an effective leader of his party. I hope he would grant me the same. The question before us is, which point of view and which party do we want to lead the United States?
Mr. Nixon, would you like to comment on that statement?
I have no comment.
Nixon had been in hospital with a bad knee, and when he showed up to the TV studio, he refused makeup. It's said that Kennedy also refused makeup, only to have his campaign team apply it in his dressing room. The result? Kennedy looked tan and polished, Nixon sweaty and shifty. Polls afterwards showed that those watching on TV scored the debate for Kennedy, while those listening on radio were much more likely to rate it a Nixon win or a draw. The power of picture come to life.
I should make it very clear that I do not think we're doing enough. That I am not satisfied as an American with the progress that we are making. This is a great country, but I think it could be a greater country. And this is a powerful country, but I think it could be a more powerful country.
We are in a deadly competition. A competition not only with the men in the Kremlin, but the men in Peking. We're ahead in this competition, as Senator Kennedy, I think, has implied. But when you're in a race, the only way to stay ahead is to move ahead.
As TV audiences grew, the candidates were better prepared and more familiar with the small screen, and few more so than actor-turned-politician Ronald Reagan. Coming into the second debate of his re-election campaign in 1984 against Walter Mondale, Reagan found himself under pressure over his age. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? He went on to deliver one of the greatest mic drop moments in presidential debate history.
You already are the oldest president in history, and some of your staff say you were tired after your most recent encounter with Mr. Mondale. I recall yet that President Kennedy had to go for days on end with very little sleep during the Cuba Missile Crisis. Is there any doubt in your mind that you would be able to function in such circumstances?
Not at all, Mr. Truitt, and I want you to know that also I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Vice president debates soon entered the fold, and while most are pretty bland affairs, some have gone down in history, like the debate between George H.W. Bush's running mate Dan Quayle and Democratic Senator Lloyd Bentsen in 1988, after Quayle compared himself to JFK.
I served with Jack Kennedy. I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
On his way to defeat against Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush was slammed after checking his watch during a debate, appearing to suggest he had better places to be back in 1992. And years before Donald Trump followed Hillary Clinton around on stage, Democratic hopeful Al Gore was criticised for standing too close to George Bush during their debate, allegedly trying to intimidate him. And he sighed repeatedly and loudly when his opponent was speaking. He lost a massively tight election. But what I have found remarkable listening back to these old debates is how different things are now. In all the examples so far, there were tough words and strong arguments and zingers galore. And when it was personal, it was still rarely ever nasty. The best example maybe being Senator John McCain's response to this audience question about Barack Obama in 2008.
I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
And then along came 2016.
There was even a time when he didn't get an Emmy for his TV program 3 years in a row, and he started tweeting that the Emmys were rigged against
him. Should have gotten it.
Donald Trump's rise in the Republican Party swept away all previous niceties and reshaped U.S. politics like no one before.
She wants open borders, now we can talk about Putin. I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's absolutely.
She doesn't like Putin because Putin has outsmarted her at every step of the way. Excuse me. She's been proven to be a liar on so many different ways. This is just another lie. Excuse me. My turn. Such a nasty woman.
Trust fund. It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
And that new tone continued into 2020 when Trump faced off against Joe Biden.
The question
Supreme
is,
Court Justice, radical question,
left.
Will you shut
who is
up,
on,
man.
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
I'm not here to call out his lies. Everybody knows he's a liar.
You were a senator. And
you're
the
worst
way,
president America has ever had. Come on.
But one of the most significant moments in U.S. presidential debate history has already happened this year. Joe Biden called out Donald Trump looking for an early debate.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. And since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal.
That clip, well, after the debate they actually had, it's aged pretty badly.
What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America. I mean, billionaires in America. And what's happening? They're in a situation where they, in fact, pay 8.2% in taxes. If they just paid 24%, 25%, either one of those numbers, they'd raise $500 billion, I should say, in a 10-year period. We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look.
Biden's frailty and lack of mental agility caused mass panic in the Democratic Party and effectively, in one night, in one debate, ended his hopes of re-election. Less than a month later, Joe Biden withdrew from the Democratic ticket, backing his vice president, Kamala Harris. She's reclaimed the momentum for her party, but has never faced a test like this one, heading into the bear pit with a wounded and off-message Trump who's liable to say anything. And in an age where every zinger and every slip will be posted in 20-second clips on social media sites for eyeballs across the globe, the impact of the debate has never been stronger.
Our political correspondent, Sean Defoe, there with that analysis of debates through the ages. And it raises the question as to what it is that Kamala Harris hopes to achieve in the debate and what she can achieve given the nature of her opponent. To analyse that, Terry Sheridan is with us. He's managing editor of WSHU Public Radio. Terry, is Kamala Harris's objective, should Kamala Harris's objective in this be to try to take down Donald Trump, or to set out her stall for whatever floating voters are still available?
I think I think her main objective is to do the second, as you said, to show that she is presidential, that she is unflappable in the face of Donald Trump, and the fact that she is moderate. And as a secondary thing, let Donald Trump take down himself. We know that Donald Trump is someone who is uncontrollable, someone who, you know, can easily be, you know, provoked into saying stuff. She has to pick her fight with him, you know, because, you know, he's just a fire hose of misstatements and lies. You know, which ones do you correct? You don't want to be there correcting him everything. Some things you just have to let there, but some things you have to challenge. When do you provoke and when do you respond?
In terms of provoking him, because I've read a number of analysts saying that the objective is to get him angry and to get him to fly off the handle. Given that the expectation and the accepted norms for Trump is that he has a capacity to live in his own fantasies, that he is untethered to the truth, and that he exists to deliver ad hominem attacks, what difference does it make if she gets him angry?
Well, again, if you get him angry, he's liable to say something that will turn off, again, the very few swing voters, or an important group that's emerging is people who don't like Trump, but they're not necessarily going to vote for a Democrat. If you can get Trump to say things, to show his side of himself, to say something that's like so completely off the wall, you know, that could move the needle a bit towards Harris. The other thing is sometimes, you know, as we say, give him enough rope. That's one of the things that she would have to do so that he can say things or go off on a tangent, much like he did last week at that economic appearance in New York, where he basically just throws out word salad that doesn't make any sense at all.
What about fact-checking? Because one of the big challenges is whether or not, as you say, she challenges every lie as it emerges, whether or not she should rebut that which he accuses her of if it's not factually accurate, particularly given that she can't speak when he is speaking. That's going to be tricky.
It's going to be tricky. I'm not being paid as a political consultant, but I would say certain things you have to let go because they are just so outrageous on the face of it. Other things, you know, challenge when it's in a personal attack against her or something that's so outrageous. But a lot of times, you know, again, just listening to him say things you don't need to challenge. A good example would be over the past a couple of days where he's made the claim that you send your kid to school and they come home with a sex change operation. On the face of that, is that something you challenge or is that just something you shake your head at and move on? That would be the tactical decisions that Kamala Harris has to make tonight.
But even that is an extreme, it shouldn't be, but it's an extremely difficult tactical decision because on the one hand, you have the QAnon conspiracy theorists who believe that notion. On the other, he has a lot of supporters who say, well, patently that is hyperbole. We know it to be hyperbole, so there's no point attacking it. Very difficult then to decide how do you take that on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, that's why she needs to pick strategically going into it. She needs to say, okay, if he says this, I'll, you know, roll my eyes or I'll shake my head or whatever. If he says this, I will challenge. Whether she goes in, somebody, one of the political consultants here in the States last night said she should actually start off with, okay, these are your lies. Even though they're not allowed to question each other, she can just say, these are your lies, you know, and point them out before, you know, he says them, hopefully to get him going and, you know, again, show his instability or his incapability of staying on message.
From his perspective, then, I assume one of the key things that he will want to do is attach her at the hip to the Biden presidency and to the Biden policies.
Attach her at the hip, saying that she was part of the decision, you know, whether it comes to immigration, whether it comes to the economy, whether it comes to the global situation, whether it's in Ukraine or Gaza or anywhere. Oh, absolutely. He's going to try to attach her to Joe Biden and have her as being a major architect of policies, again, especially on something like immigration that are deeply unpopular in the States.
As to the policy matters, then, what are the key battlegrounds? Immigration, inflation, cost of living?
Those are the two big ones. I mean, again, the situation in Gaza, for instance, or in Ukraine, you know, again, that's more of a political debate. But people, you know, people prices in the United States have risen over the past 4 years. Immigration situation is a worry to everybody. So he'll try to attach those policies and on those responses from the Biden administration onto her, and especially immigration. I mean, yesterday, I don't know if the story made it over there, but the whole thing about Haitian immigrants, which was proven to be false, that were stealing, you know, household pets to eat because they were overwhelming a community in Ohio. So again, they're trying to touch that because immigration is a sore spot.
Now, one of the things that is getting said a lot is that Kamala Harris is likely to be formidable because she is a former prosecutor and therefore for a living was debating people and making her case in court. If I cast my mind back to her versus Mike Pence, he was seen as a relatively easy opponent. I don't remember her disassembling him.
No, she didn't disassemble him. And again, a vice presidential debate is completely different. You basically, it's an audition to see whether you could step in as you go. You know, if anything happens to the president, the prosecutorial aspect of this is important if she acts like a prosecutor, but acts like a smart prosecutor. And then again, that's knowing when to be firm, knowing when to push. And as I said earlier, knowing when to let the subject of your questioning, you know, hang themselves, so to speak.
Final thing, Terry, the unique thing about Donald Trump is that he is facing into this debate with a history that would, any aspect of it, would have utterly destroyed any previous presidential candidate. A court has found him guilty of sexual assault. He has been multiply fined for defamation. He has multiple felony convictions. I mean, these are don't pass go, you're finished, until he arrived on the political scene. Is it worth her using any of that? Or at this stage, is everybody so aware that it has no effect?
I think she'll try to make the point, going back to the prosecutor's role, that she's a prosecutor. Donald Trump is someone who is a convicted felon. And if she can subtly remind that, I mean, it's something, as you said, everyone knows it. So you don't have to, you know, use it as a cudgel, but just remind her, remind the nation, I'm a prosecutor. He is a felon. And just subtly say it. And I wouldn't use it as I said, to hit him over the head with, because everyone knows it and everyone has opinion of it. Trump supporters believe that he's been unfairly prosecuted and persecuted, where Harris's supporters, you know, believe that Trump is absolutely guilty of everything that he's been accused of and everything that he's been convicted of.
The one thing that the guys from Off the Ball hate when we're talking about sport is when you finish the discussion by asking them to call a result. It's my first opportunity to get to do it with you, Terry. Call it. Who's going to win?
Over, under three. I think this is Harris's to lose.
Terry, thank you very much. That's Terry Sheridan, who is managing editor of WSHU Public Radio.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.